The views and opinions expressed on the following show are those of the host and not necessarily those of Bigler Broadcasting or the staff and management of FM Talk 106.5.
It's time for the George Williams Show on FM Talk 106.5. George Williams, retired U.S. Marine Major, Vietnam veteran, retired federal agent, former vice chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, and world traveler, brings his wealth of information, sharing his thoughts on today's politics, and taking your calls and texts at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome, welcome everybody out there in radio land. I am George Williams, your host, and this is the George Williams Show. We're so glad to be back here on a pretty nice night, Tuesday night. And man, it was very good weather today. Very good weather. I really enjoyed it. I did a lot of work. I had about 3 acres of my land mulched today, put a fence up and have some goats and cows out there. I already have a couple of calves out there. So it's only a few days, ladies and gentlemen, before Christmas. And I know it's kind of sad because a lot of people won't be traveling, you know, because of the COVID. And it doesn't even seem like Christmas to me. But, hey, that's the way it goes. It's a situation, so we have to do the best we can under these circumstances. All right, folks, there's so much happening. And our first half of the show, we're going to bring someone who we talked to a couple of weeks ago. And his name is Dr. Edson Walters. And we'll bring him in a few minutes. But, folks, this situation here with these with the election and with all of these Antifa and Black Lives Matter, I thought we'd talk about that for the first half of the show. And then the second half, we'll have someone else coming in, and we'll talk. They'll give us an update on the situation in Georgia, because that's very critical, very, very critical with those two runoffs for the U.S. Senate seats. So, folks, we're going to bring on right now Dr. Edson Walters, and he's no stranger to us. Doctor, how you doing?
Hello, good evening. How you doing?
Great, great. Nice to have you back. And, you know, I tell you, I keep seeing this Black Lives Matter, and I said, well, we've got to talk about it, because it's going into different directions, and I really want to get your thoughts on what do you think about and what's going on with these Black Lives Matter folks.
Well, you know, my first venture into economic development in the Black community was as a young graduate at the University of Alabama. Mm-hmm. I actually went to work from 9 to 5 for 6 months as an unpaid volunteer to try to make a difference in minority communities in terms of economic development. And at the time, I was involved with the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And I realized there were several different challenges facing minority communities. But the major challenge that faced minority communities, this was back in 1994, was the access to capital. And so as a result of working with small businesses, I came up with some things that I thought was very critical and would significantly help economic development and economic empowerment in the Black community. And to my surprise, I really couldn't get anybody in the Democratic Party interested in working to help create economic development in the Black community. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was focused on policies that was really counterproductive. And I'm saying all of that to say is when you look at the type of policies that are supported by Black Lives Matter today, it's pretty much the same thing. The policies that are supported, I mean, if you're going to say Black Lives Matter, I think the policies should reflect the fact that Black Lives Matter. But too often, the policies are supported by Black Lives Matter have an adverse effect on the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Black Lives Matter, they don't support school choice. I mean, if Black lives really matter, why do we keep kids stuck in failing school? I mean, Black Lives Matter, they want to defund the police. And the people who end up being victimized are the very same Black lives that you say matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spend so much time on policies that adversely affect the Black community. I mean, you could take, for instance, illegal immigration. Illegal immigrants aren't going to the rich neighborhoods. They're competing for jobs in lower-income neighborhoods against the same minorities that we say Black Lives Matter, but they're taking economic opportunity away from many people in the Black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really think Black Lives Matter and you want to talk about Black Lives Matter, at some point the policies have to start reflecting the same.
Right. Doc,
today,
hold on.
Really doesn't.
Hold on 1 second. We have a caller. They probably have a question for you. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello. Are you on the air? Hello, hello. Okay, that caller is not on the air. Go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at the dynamics and you look at what is happening in the Black community, too often we focus on symptoms of the problem. If you look at the real problem in the Black community, in Black communities, are economic development and economic empowerment. Because when you talk about affordable housing, if you address the issue of economic development, then people can afford houses. When you talk about affordable healthcare, if you address the economic situation, then the healthcare kind of works itself out. So everything really leads back to economic empowerment in minority communities. And what we do is we spend so much time focused on issues that have to do with race and policies that we end up sort of cutting our nose off to spite our face.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems I've seen as a result of the predatory lending narrative, we saw Washington, they passed Dodd-Frank, which severely restricted access to capital in minority communities. It pretty much eliminated subprime lending for most minority communities.
Right.
At the same time,
hold on a minute. We're going to be going into our break here, okay? We'll continue on the other side of the break. Folks, we'll be right back. This is your George Williams, your host.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. We're talking to Dr. Edison Waters regarding this fanfare about Black Lives Matter. Go ahead, Dr. Waters.
Yeah, I was saying, the creation of Black Lives Matter was based on fictitious information about, it really started back with Brown, and Hands Up, Don't Shoot, which is documented that, this guy was Michael Brown was out of control, tried to take away the police weapon and end up getting shot. So the entire Black Lives Matter movement was really developed based on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
But what people did was bad policies in the Black community that put the Black community at a disadvantage was really exploited in order to create a narrative of institutionalized racism.
Mm-hmm.
And one classic example is that the restrictions they passed on subprime lending that allow wealthy investors to buy of all the property in the Black communities. And what that did, it restricted people from in that very community from purchasing homes because investors and mortgage companies didn't want to lend any more on property values that were lower property values. So the people in the communities couldn't buy the homes. But all the wealthy investors came from outside the community and bought up all the property. And, I mean, if you're a wealthy investor, you could use a subprime loan and you could buy 1,000 houses if you want. But if you're a young Black family, lower income, and you want to buy a little house in the same community to live in, you can't. So a lot of these things, policies that were implemented, put the Black community at a disadvantage, and then you had Black Lives Matter come in and exploit the struggle and strife in the Black community in order to push an agenda based on false information.
Okay, and I can't disagree with you on that. What about the matter concerning the police? Because they really use that, especially doing this prior to this election, and a lot of people believed it.
Well, you know, we have, unfortunately, we have a large segment of the Black community that are low information voters, and the only thing that you have to do in order to get a large segment of the community worked up is scream racism, racism, racism. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the group Black Lives Matter, their policies doesn't reflect the idea that Black Lives Matter, but what they do is they use the slogan Black Lives Matter in order to stir up strife in the Black community, appeal to people emotionally who are low-income voters.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the low-income voters respond based on false information. But at the end of the day, the policies, the agenda of Black Lives Matter movement isn't really helping the Black community. Because the policies that are advocated, one of the main parts of Black Lives Matter is the destruction of the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the biggest problems, and this is stated in their platform, One of the biggest problems in the black community is the lack of fathers. So if the lack of fathers in the black community is a problem, how does the destruction of the nuclear family as a stated goal of Black Lives Matter help promote anything positive in the black community? I mean, so you see the entire Black Lives Matter movement is really based on an emotional appeal based on false information.
Right. And that's being, I think, and maybe you can respond to this, it appears that it's most of those folks who are involved in these associations and Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all them are very radical elements of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, I challenge anyone to come up with a rationale of how the policies advocated by Black Lives Matter help the black community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you say Black Lives Matter, then the policies should be making a difference in the community if that's the focus of your movement. But unfortunately, I mean, it doesn't. And so we really need to call it out for what it is.
Also, if Black Lives Matter that much, why are there so much killings going on in the urban areas, in the black neighborhoods? It's black-on-black crime. I've had a couple of my relatives in Mobile killed or injured by other blacks. And you don't see the politicians, black politicians, going out and protesting against those who are killing other blacks. And Chicago and some of those other cities, it's the same way. You don't hear that. And my question is, why not?
Well, unfortunately, when you have a lack of economic opportunity, it always breeds high crime.
Mm-hmm.
And until we start focusing on policies to help create economic opportunities in the black community, we're never going to address the problem, because the murders and the killings in the black community is a symptom of the broader problem of a lack of economic opportunity. And so if you have a disease and you're only treating the symptom of the disease, you're never going to be cured.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the problems, you know, with Black Lives Matter. I mean, they're not even focusing on treating symptoms of the problem, but they're not even focused on the problem. And so until the policies start reflecting the idea behind Black Lives Matter, I mean, we're going to continue having problems, and we're going to continue to see an escalation of violence in black communities.
Right. And also we have to look at other things that facilitate this, drugs is one, and I think that's a real big part of, instead of going to school and completing your education, a lot of them are dropping out and getting involved with drug trafficking and selling drugs.
Well, you know, and the drug problem actually also reverts back to economic opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at what is happening in the black community, it all can be traced back to a lack of economic opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you start addressing economic opportunities, you're going to start addressing the drugs. You know, if you address the education problem, that's going to help in terms of people being able to find jobs and have more economic opportunities. I mean, and, you know, we spend a lot of time focused on the symptoms of the problem instead of trying to specifically solve the problem. But it all comes back to economic opportunity. Affordable housing, that has to do with economic opportunity. Affordable health care, that has to do with economic opportunity. And school choice directly affects economic opportunity. Right. And so until we really start focusing on economic opportunity in minority communities, we're going to continue to see high crime. And, I mean, it's really unfortunate that the Black Lives Matter movement has hijacked the narrative in a black community, and the programs they put forth really have no benefit, no benefit
right.
for the black community.
All right, Doc. We have to go into our other break, and we have another guest coming on. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll get you back here again.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, and good night to your listening audience.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Edson Walters. We'll be right back, folks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. I am George Williams, your host, and part two of our hour-long program. And we have with us Miss Letitia Jones, and she's no stranger. She's been with us a couple of weeks ago and a couple of times prior to that. And she is in Georgia, and she gave us an update last time, and we told her we were invited on again. And she's going to give us another update on the situation there. How you doing, Letitia?
I am doing well. I'm doing very well, George, and I hope you and everyone else is doing well also.
Same here. We are. So what, now tell our audience what group you're with there.
I am with the NRSC, which is the National Republican Senate Committee.
Right.
And that is a group that I am here with.
Oh.
And we're on the ground. And it's a team of us. What I see is that we have a couple people from the RPOF that's on our team. What they have done is pull an entire team together, and I am a part of that team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's going on the ground there in Georgia?
Well, here, I'm actually in what you would consider North Georgia right now. Before, when I talked with you, I was in Atlanta, mm-hmm. On the ground down there. And when I was in Atlanta, I was with the New Journey PAC, who is Bo Smartley is actually the founder of New Journey PAC.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's just kind of, you know, people are really afraid right about now because of they are doing these mail-in ballot deals. They're angry in reference to what's going on with the presidential election. Mm-hmm. And it's just, to say the least, I never saw the response from people that I feel like we're getting right now. I think that the party is doing a good job as far as entertaining people, but at the same time, because it's the Christmas holiday, you know, it's just so emotional for them.
Right, right. How is the campaigning doing for our two Republican candidates?
Senator Perdue is awesome, and I say that because his response is great. He is out with the people. He's communicating, and he's getting support from not just Republicans. He's getting support from Democrats also.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Kelly Loeffler is doing a good job, but at the same time, I listen to the people that we talk to on a day-to-day basis. And they are very skeptical about her because of a couple of things. Once she was appointed by Governor Kemp, and he's destroyed pretty much so all faith that anybody would even have in a Republican Party here in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And with him appointing her, you know, I try to reassure them, and I tell the team as well, we have to continue to reassure them that we're going to hold her accountable if she flips on us. Because right now, that's the conversation going on. The super voters, the voters, everybody, nobody knows who to trust at this particular point. Mm-hmm. So we have to have that conversation. And then, on top of that, a lot of her T-shirts, her baseball, her caps, they came out of China. So, it, you know, I don't know who was on her team and who was directing her, but I wish that someone would actually just tap her on the shoulder and say, you need to regroup this and rethink this and be very careful, because we have to show unity in our party, but at the same time, we're rebuilding trust in our voters and the constituents and the people is what we're doing out here. So it's not just getting people out to vote. It's building the trust that we need, because the young voters they're angry as well. They're like, some of them have said they don't even want to vote. Mm-hmm. So we have to continue to, it's almost like being a psychologist to a degree, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's truly, truly unbelievable. Now, in my opinion, the number one cause of all this corruption during the election on November 3rd was because of the mail-in ballots, okay? Mm-hmm. Are they allowing that to happen in Georgia now? I know they were supposed to be going to court to try to get that completely eliminated.
Yes, they are allowing it to happen. Mm-hmm. Right now, nothing has stopped it from happening. Mm-hmm. What they are in court currently and what they're pushing for is to do validation or verification on the signatures of the mail-in ballot, because they have not done that, and that was one of the things that was not done, and that would possibly help us in reference to verifying who's sending these ballots and where they're coming from when they send these ballots in.
Well, didn't Stacey Ingram say that she is sending out all those ballots, or she's responsible for them?
Oh, she did. Oh, absolutely. Her name, she's back at it again. And what concerns me is that it sounds like they have a system in place.
Mm-hmm.
And that system, I don't know who created the system or how they created it, but I think we definitely need to get to the core issue of who was behind this as well, because I'll tell you the truth in reference to you got to remember that Kemp was also the Secretary of State here, so he knows how this election system works very well, because that was part of his responsibility,
and he allowed it to happen.
Yes,
it happened under his watch.
Yes.
So
under his watch.
Wow. And what is he saying? He's the governor. What is he saying about this situation?
You know what, George? We haven't heard from him. You don't see him out like you think you would see him. If you're fighting for something, you're out and about, and people should see how vocal you are.
Right.
We don't see him. We don't hear him. We hear everybody else, but not from the governor or the Secretary of State either.
Wow.
So it's almost like they're just sitting back. They know what's going to happen. And you can kind of feel it in the energy in the air, because that's how people are feeling as well. But right now, this week alone, we've had about 2 million people that's already voted as far as the early voting.
Mm-hmm.
And those ballots are coming in as well. You know, the actual election day is going to be on January the 5th.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting, to say the least. I would think that, and I would hope that the Republicans are pushing and taking some of these volunteers they're putting on the ground to make sure that we are at some of these polls and doing poll watching. Because earlier when they did recounts, even in Philly, because I was in Philly also, but they would not let us, as far as the Republicans, in to verify, you know, the ballot counting. So these are things that I think we need to prepare going into January 5th for. because I don't have hear any conversation about it. But as far as I'll tell you, you know, it's just so interesting. I am in Albany at this particular time, and this is where I have been maybe for the last month. And it's so ironic that the Democrat candidate and his crew, actually his whole tour bus came and stayed at this hotel where we're at.
Whoa.
Warnock. And it was just so interesting, just to say the least, of the team, the staff. It came out, it was pleasant. And, you know, everybody behaved accordingly, but he's not a friendly person. He doesn't speak to people. You know, it's just so interesting to see. And it's just crazy at this particular point. Just
right.
The behavior, you know, they've inundated us with other buses that come through here as well. The Black Lives Matter movement also, you know, they're out here. They're trying to be intimidating to some of our people that's on the ground.
Right.
And it's just crazy that you have to just watch everything that we're doing.
Right. And we got a minute before we go into our break. But, you know, I've heard from so many people, Leticia, why doesn't Black Lives Matter in the urban and the Black communities? Because they're killing each other every day. They're wounding each other. And if Black Lives Matter, why don't you hear the Black politicians talk about it when somebody in their district get blown away by another Black?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But they don't want to talk about that, George. You know that. Every time I bring that conversation up, you know, and I tell them, I says, as much noise as you all make, and Black Lives Matter was interesting, they're not Black people.
I know. Hold that thought, because we're going to be going into our next break. And I really want to talk about that, because most of them you see out there are not Black.
No.
Folks, we'll be right back with Miss Leticia Jones.
Welcome back to the George Williams Show. Your texts and comments at 251-343-0106. Now, making the mission possible, here's George Williams.
Welcome back, folks. This is George Williams. We're talking to Miss Leticia Jones, and she's one of the boots on the ground in Georgia. She's been there for over a month now. And before the break, I asked her the question about the Black Lives Matter and what are they doing. It's definitely a political group. To me, it is. And Leticia, you were saying before the break that a lot of those folks are not even Black.
They're Caucasian kids.
Unbelievable.
I have been to Philadelphia. And the Black Lives, and I'm sitting there, and it just blew me away. I'm sitting there saying, something's wrong with this picture. They are Caucasian kids. They're white kids.
Right.
And this is what they've been doing. Now, the experience that we've had here is that they may have a get out the Black boat bus driving around.
Right.
But then when you get off the bus, it's all Caucasian people.
Wow.
All of them. It's all Caucasian people. And then I tend to see we had, and I'll share an experience, one of the young kids has, some of our young boys, and they are Black American, because I try to give them opportunity. And that's what this is for, so they can learn, continue to grow, and understand why they are Republicans. But they went to a door, and there was a gentleman in the community following them around, and he was a Black man, but he had a Black Lives Matter mask on his face. And they kept asking him, you know, we out here, we canvassing, da da da. They told him who they were, and he was saying, well, you're not going to all the doors. And they said, because it's not on our list. We only go to the ones that's on our list, because we have walk books.
Right.
And those sometimes they keep you a little safer as well. But I just found it to be interesting that you're aware of Black Lives Matter mask. you'll intimidate some black kids. That's just foolishness. Then when they are out here protesting, they're all Caucasian kids. They're all white kids.
Wow. Wow.
So we have a major problem of confusion in this country at this particular point. And it's just crazy because for me, I sit there and I tell them, you know, and I tended to see what was interesting, even with the kids with Black Lives Matter. Now, all these white kids, they go and they pick on the older Caucasian Republicans is what they have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so crazy, the miseducation, and they are calling themselves Black Lives Matter, but they're not representing anybody from the black community. And I asked them, you know what? Why don't you go over there to the hood? Let's see how well that goes over. That's
right.
Where I want to see you at. I want to see you over here, you know, being selective in locations that you are or events that you choose to attend as well.
Right. Now, do you guys have some sort of police protection, security when you go to these
actually,
areas?
No, we don't. But after that incident, what I did was I went to the sheriff's department and I told him, you know, you all have to do better. But, George, let me tell you something about this police. I mean, some of these towns, you cannot make this stuff up in Georgia. Georgia needs to be revamped. You cannot make this up in reference to the police, the behavior, the behavior of the community. The sheriffs are pretty good, I'd say, when we need things. But as far as what we do is that's why it's important to send people out in teams. When you go out in teams, you double up, two or three, it's a lot better and it's a lot safer. And you are not going to believe this, George, when I tell you. But you know who's targeted the most are my black kids.
Oh, okay.
And they're targeted by everybody, the Black Lives Matter crew. It's just ridiculous. The police. I've even had some people call the police on them because they were in their community. So it's just kind of, it's crazy out here right now. We are in a time of our country, everybody should be praying. And everybody should be focusing on where do we go from here. We have to maintain our president as well because this is not good.
Right, right. And what do you see in the very near future if the Democrats are, if they are able to hold on? What do you see? I know it's not bright.
Oh, God. I just can't even visualize it, to be honest. I cannot even visualize I can't even speak it into existence. I think that everybody needs to make sure that they are calling in Congress people, their senators as well, and they're pushing the right agenda and the right buttons. And I think for us as Republicans, we can't assume that people are going to continue to support. And we have to take them for face value at this particular point. We honestly do because it's just crazy and you don't know who is who. And most of us just try to stay, most of what I do is try to keep these kids safe because a lot of them are younger as well. Mm-hmm. And I'll also state that, you know, that on Kelly Loeffler's team, one of the 19-year-old kids was in a car accident. Mm-hmm. And he was killed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's getting kind of nasty out here. And I do know it was under investigation to make sure that it was an accident.
Right.
At this particular point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, is your husband there with you? Because, folks, Leticia's husband is a retired Palm Beach County Sheriff official.
Yes.
Is he there with you?
He is not here because
okay.
He's also back in, you know, he's in dental school for a second career.
Right.
So, no, he's not on this. He's not here with me. I was just able to get more. I wanted more our kids to be exposed because it's something different. It's something they need to see and experience in order to grow and to kind of build their strength up as well in reference to who they are, their belief system. And I'd love for you to meet some of these young men because they're black men. They come from different backgrounds, different walks of life, but they are they are the Republicans, to be honest, and they are strong at it. And it's just, it's great to see and it's great to hear as well. But right now, I'm telling you, everybody needs to be praying, George, in this country, because what's going on right now is just, and I'm going to have to mention something else to you about this COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So we had a few people that needed to go and get tested. Mm-hmm. They gave them the option to get tested because I think that they planted a lady here that came here with COVID, and I feel like they did it intentionally because this is what they do in politics.
Right.
But listen to this. When the kids, I told them, you know, I'm not letting them put none up my nose and I'm not taking no vaccine. I'm just not doing it, period. Mm-hmm. Anyways, they went to the place to be tested. George, do you know they asked them if they were Democrats or Republicans?
Oh, no, you're kidding.
I kid you not, George. They asked them, are you a Democrat or a Republican?
Wow.
That's scary.
And a lot of these are young black men.
Yes.
Who are working on behalf of the Republicans.
I told them, don't take it. You do not have to take that test. Mm-hmm. You don't have to.
Right.
Don't feel pressured because it's not required. But at the same time, just to hear them say that, you know how scary that is? To ask somebody at a clinic if you're a Democrat or a Republican?
Yeah, that is not good. And they're doing that because these young men that are helping you guys are black Republicans, correct?
Correct.
And these are black Democrats asking those questions.
Correct.
Oh, my God. So it's a lot worse on the ground than we know of.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because now, you know, when you ask questions like that at a clinic, it makes you think, okay, are you going to give me COVID?
Right.
You know, right. What is this about? What does one thing have to do with the other?
Right. Leticia, I got to stop you. We're running out of time. We only have about 15 seconds. So we're going to get you again before the election, okay?
Yes, sir. And I'll definitely have on election night, I'll make sure that we're talking. And I'll keep you posted on anything going on. But God's blessings to you and Merry Christmas to you and your audience.
You too. Thank you very much. All right, folks, that's about it. Time is up. Time really flies when you're having fun. Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll see you same time next week. Until then, Vicon Dales.